Hello and welcome to the Red Robin Podcast, powered by Budget Size Auto Centre and 360 Chartered Accountants, the independent Hawkinson Rovers podcast. Hello and welcome to another episode of the Red Robin Podcast Weekly. After a tonsillitis-induced absence, I am now back and fighting fit and looking forward to the Robins Round 17 trip to take on the Lee Leopards. This week, I'm delighted to welcome James Perlin, of course, podcast regular, and Scott Solway, director of Sully. He'll be joining us at some point during the podcast as we discuss all the latest goings on at Craven Park. And as ever, James, there's plenty going on, not least the fact that Rod Stewart will be gracing the hallowed turf of Craven Park next week. But, James, it's been an incredible couple of weeks. Rovers, the last time we recorded, were a bit of a slump, really. We've got two victories on the trot, and we seem to be getting our mojo back.
Yeah, it's good to get back on the horse, isn't it, so to speak. I think when you look at the games we did lose, they were top teams, but the Wigan and Warrington, but the two games after that, I think we just sort of obviously didn't play to full potential, but the last two, so obviously back on it, even if the Wakefield game was a bit, I think turgid is probably better to describe it.
Yeah. I mean, let's just rewind. I mean, obviously we haven't done a podcast for a couple of games now, and the Salford victory, it was very welcome, wasn't it?
It was.
I think Rovers fans really enjoyed that one, not least the fact it was a cup game as well.
Yeah, it was. And, I think, that first half we played, it seems ages ago now, that actually. The first half, I think probably the best we played all season. And, Salford just had no answers for us. And I think it was very telling. I think Salford had clearly come to, come to niggle a bit. But Rovers, they were getting them wound up, and Salford were just like losing the cool. And it was great to see. And this Rovers just weren't falling into their trap, and just carried on playing rugby, played decent stuff, defensively solid, and just looked, in total, utter, complete control for that first 40 minutes. Bit of a slow start to the start of the second half, but then pulled away again to work for the last quarter, and got a thorough, deserved their victory.
Yeah, and Rovers' reward for that victory is a semi-final tie at Headingley against the Wigan Warriors. I mean, we know where Wigan are in the table in terms of Super League, but it's a tie that, I personally don't think that fearful of, James. I think when you look at how Wigan have performed over the course of the Super League season so far, obviously we beat them on the opening game of the season. We've seen what Wigan can do. We've seen what Wigan can't do as well. And it's a tie that leaves a lot of hope, really. I'm not fearful of that fixture whatsoever.
No, I'm not either. I think even when you looked at the other teams in the semi-finals, Lee, Saints and obviously Wigan, you look at them and really have got nothing to fear from any of them, really. Like I said, we beat Wigan first game. The beat is in Golden Point when probably with a bit more smarts and a bit more game management in that last set, we could have won that game. We beat Saints, and I think, that we've been full value in that game against Saints. And then Lee, we lost it on the last play. So again, there's nothing to fear. And I think, as Willie Peters keeps constantly saying, don't worry about the opposition, let the opposition worry about us. And I think, we're going to go into that game with full of confidence. So like I said, we've got nothing to fear. Yeah, you're right. We know what we're going to like. They're a top quality team. And I think they showed against Wigan in the quarter, against Warrington in the quarterfinals, playing for 73 minutes with down to 12 men, that, they're a bloody decent team. There's no getting away from it. But as I said, they're there to be beaten, and we've shown we can compete with them, and we can beat them.
Yeah, and we've got a long history, haven't we, of semi-finals at Headingley, and this is going back 20, 30, 35 years. I don't know what you thought, James. The circumstances around the ticket arrangement, it seemed a bit farcical at the time. I mean, many Rover supporters, including myself, assumed that we'd be getting the south stand wrongly, of course. We got allocated the north and then eastern side. That sold out in record numbers. The Robin selling out, 5,000 tickets within 24 hours. We then get allocated the south stand, which for many people would have been their preference. But it was almost like the writing was on the wall. You could have predicted that was happening. And it just seems a bit strange, doesn't it, James, that you could have housed all the Rovers supporters in that south stand, probably with a smattering of Rovers supporters everywhere else. It just seems strange that we weren't allocated that south stand in the first place. Of course, after our previous semi-final in 2015, holds a lot of memories. I know it's a different stand, but you get a sense that Rovers supporters wanted to be there. And we know we can influence the game when we're stood in there.
Yeah, I mean, at the end of the rugby league, isn't it? You know, and sort of the word brewery and piss up and couldn't organise come to mind. But yeah, I think when we saw that Wigan had got the West Terrace and part of the North Stand, I think the assumption was that we'd get the South Stand and perhaps some of that East Stand as well. When they said got the East Stand and the North Stand, it's like, whoa, okay, what's going on here? We were able to, we managed to get some tickets, fortunately, but the only ones we could get were in the North Stand. So, we're going to be there. We're going to enjoy it. And I think it was you actually commented that in a way with them now having to open the West South Stand for, to accommodate the Rovers fans, that's probably benefit Rovers, because then they're going to have we're going to have fans in the North Stand, we're going to have fans in the East Stand and fans in the South Stand. And it's just like, there's just going to be that wall of noise, really.
Yeah.
And then the Wigan fans are going to be on that West Terrace where, we all know you can shout and scream as much as you like on that West Terrace, but it just disappears into the Leeds air noise.
Yeah, so and that is the one stand you would not want to be at. Basic of your support to be in there. And I think, yeah, some people are happy with where they've got the tickets, et cetera, et cetera. But do you know what? When them Rovers players run out and they see behind the sticks full, they look to the left, see that half full, they look to the right and they see a big contingent of Rovers supporters, that will make a difference. And I feel like we can almost suck the tries in. We can bring it into us. So, we made a massive impact in that 2015 semi-final. And all I would say to the Rovers supporters is, when you go, whether you sat up, whether you stood up, whether you're in the North Stand, whether you're in the East Stand, whether you're in the South, you just make the noise. And honestly, you can make the difference. And the good news is, James, Scott is able to join us early. So, Scotty, how are you doing, mate?
Hi, Scott.
How are you doing, Jono? Evening, James. How are we doing?
Good, thanks, Scott. Are you? Good to meet you.
Yeah, good. Thank you. Managed to get here a little bit earlier than I thought I would do. So, yeah, we're all good.
No, I appreciate that, Scott. I'll tell you what, Scott, let's go straight into it. Sully, just being at Hull Truck, rave reviews. I know I've seen so many people comment about what a fantastic performance. Obviously, it's been performed previously and it's been redone again in 2023. From your point of view, Scott, how did it go?
Far better than I expected it to. As you can imagine, the run-up to it, there was a lot of pressure, as I mentioned to you, where when we spoke a few weeks back, there's a lot of pressure in telling somebody's life story on stage, isn't there? There's also the pressure of hoping that people will buy tickets and come and see it, because without an audience, well, it doesn't mean anything, does it? But to get 7 stand innovations in 7 performances was more than I could ever have dreamed of. And a lot of that was obviously down to the 3 outstanding actors that played Sully and the other 2 roles as well. We had a mixture of Rovers fans there, plenty of LFC fans as well. There was lots of banter in the auditorium. Red Red Robin and Old Faithful was sang every evening and the fans were singing it against each other. And it was just brilliant. Even Hull Truck have commented, they've commented, they said they've never, ever seen 7 stand innovations in 7 performances ever for any piece of theatre. So I'm over the moon with it, absolutely over the moon with it. And I thank everybody who came to see it, took the time to come and see it. And, of course, thanks to Rovers as well, who did so much to help promote it, on the big screen and through the club and with Neil Rudd on the pitch as well. And yourself, Jono, thank you for having me on a few weeks back. And, yeah, absolutely over the moon with it. And most importantly, as are Ros and the Sullivan family as well. You know, I popped round to see Ros last night. I had to nip to see her just to take her a few bits and bobs back, and she was in tears again. You know, she said, "I just couldn't believe." She said, "A words to me where you brought Clive alive again for all of us." And she said, "I can't thank you enough." So yeah, it was absolutely brilliant.
Wow, amazing words that, Scott, and you should be very proud of yourself for what you've done, of course, Dave. And is that it parked for a little bit now? Do you think it'll come back? I suppose it's one of them stories that it's timeless, isn't it? It's folklore. It's almost, I don't want to say Robin Hood kind of thing, but it transcends time. It doesn't disappear. And I'd imagine in 10 years' time, if it came back out again, it would still resonate with people. It's still important.
I think the most important thing about it is, although it's a story about Clive Sullivan and his life story, it's also a story about loss, and it's a story about success to adversity. So there's a lot of denominators in the play that everybody can relate to in everybody's life every single day. We've all lost somebody. You know, we all probably know people who've achieved success to adversity. So it's not just the fact that it's a story about Clive and his life. There's something in the play for everybody, and everybody can relate to something that goes on in that play. Now, early talks are, I know that BBC Wales have been in touch with Ros, and there's a guy who works for BBC Wales who was really interested in taking the play into Cardiff. Mm. And it was said, you know, even Ros said to them, look, there's a lot of Hullisms in the play. There's so many references to Hull and places in Hull that the play might have to be perhaps rewritten a little bit to make it more adaptable for different audiences. But this guy from BBC Wales seems to think it'll work in Cardiff. So they're on about taking Sully to Cardiff at some point. I don't know whether it will happen, but it's certainly been mentioned, been mooted. And I know the actors who were in it loved it so much that they've even spoke about, you know, is it possible we could take it to Featherstone or to Dewsbury or to Castleford or to Wakefield, you know, because Clive's story will tell anywhere. It's a story of success, isn't it? It's a story of grief and of loss. And I think it'll work anyway. It might just need a few different tweaks, that's all, you know.
Yeah. And James, it's great, isn't it, that this story continues to be told and you know, Scott, Dave, the people behind it, the actors, put so much passion into it and re-energise it and make it fresh, make it relevant. And it's fantastic that it still continues to this day.
Yeah, it is, I think, you know, Scott said it's a story that can go and, you know, I think can transfer to anywhere, you know, because it's about, as you said, you know, coming to success from adversity, but also, you know, the tragedy of, you know, Clive's, you know, untimely early death. I remember, you know, many years ago reading a biography of him. I think it came out about early 1970s, and it was just fascinating to read about how he'd, you know, how his dodgy knees he'd had when he was younger, and how he'd been in the army, and how he'd, you know, signed for Hull, and how it progressed from, you know, through there and became a success. And it was just a fascinating read, and, you know, just great to keep the story and his memory, you know, continually brought to new audiences.
Yeah. Well, Scott, thank you so much for doing that, and hopefully it will go to Cardiff, it will go across into West Yorkshire and beyond, and I dare say it should be probably at the Edinburgh Fringe. You know, I think there's an audience for it. Yeah, I think there's definitely an audience for it. So let's see where it goes. I mean, that's the beauty of doing a good job. It opens up the doors. And I dare say that what you and Dave have done and the actors, you've done a good job. And hopefully people pick up on it and it's got legs and it'll go further and beyond, because it is a story about rugby league and Clive and, like you said, Scott, it's so much more than that. So fingers crossed. And Scott, you're over 28 points to 12 victors over Wakefield. For me, it was a great first half. It wasn't necessarily a great second half. I mean, you've probably been in performances with players and stuff where the same things happened, you had the intermission and it's going great, and then all of a sudden the second half doesn't transpire how you want it to do, but Rovers probably did enough in that first half to warrant the victory.
Yeah, I think so. If we're going to use theatrical terms, it was a good act one, but a poor act two, wasn't it? You know, I guess we'd done the job in the first half, though. I think when we raced into that lead, you know, I think everybody thought the floodgates were going to open and we were going to run away with maybe a 40-50 point victory. But looking at Wakefield's win over Leeds the previous week, I don't think that was ever going to be the case. We did enough in the first half to win the game, didn't we? Second half, did we go through the motions a little bit? Did we take foot off the gas? I don't know. Maybe we need to give Wakefield a bit of credit, because I think they stood up and they started throwing the ball about a bit, didn't they? Getting it to their fringes. And again, it caused us a few problems, you know, like it has done a couple of times this season, you know, getting in behind us, you know, kicks into the backfield and things like that. But it was never in doubt, was it? It was never, ever in doubt that we're ever going to struggle. I don't think Wakefield were ever going to get back into the game where it was going to be close. But I think we just got to give Wakefield a bit of credit as well for coming and having a go, which I think they did, to be fair, didn't they?
Yeah, they did. And James, I mean, my biggest frustration was that it looked like a game where there was an opportunity to score points. And what we've seen with Rovers is that even in defeat, we've been very close in games. We've kept the scoreline tight. And for me, this was a game where we had an opportunity to put some points on the board. And Scott's right, Wakefield did sort of front up in the second half, although the game was never in doubt. But I was frustrated that Rovers didn't have that killer instinct to, you know, really hammer home the victory and put points on the board, which could become crucial at the back end of the season, because we've seen how tight the Super League table is at the moment, and points difference could come into it.
Yeah, I agree. And I think, you know, you just have to go back to the Catalan game, which obviously did put a bit of a dent in our point difference. And you totally agree that the Wakefield game was potentially an opportunity to recoup some of that gap. But again, I think you've got to give credit to Wakefield. I think, you know, when I saw them at Bellevue earlier in the season, they were an absolute shambles, and you could tell they were just they were just very poor. There's nothing about them. But to be fair to them, I think on Sunday, I thought, you know, they had a go. They threw the ball around, and as you said, you know, the Cobs wanted two problems. But we got the job done in the first half. The second half, we probably just put the cue on the rat, thinking, you know what, points are in the bag. We've got a bigger game coming up against Lee next week. We're just going through the motions. And probably when you look back at it, it probably never really got out of second gear. When you contrast that performance to the Salford game, where it was just completely, you know, chalk and cheese. Mm. Yeah, I think they've just gone through the motions. But it just shows that. But also, I think I just hope they don't, you know, become complacent. I don't think Willie Peters would let them become complacent anyway. It would have been interesting if Wakefield had scored again to see what would have happened, because it just felt as though, you know, Wakefield did have some potential momentum going into it again. And I believe it's quite, you know, winning's a habit as well. And if sometimes you get into a rut, it's hard to get out of that rut as well. You know, if you're trying to claw a game back. But as I said, you know, we save some energy, and hopefully that's going to save us in good stead for tomorrow night.
Yeah, hopefully. And Scott, Lewis Senior, lots of supporters, including myself, have been calling for him to play on that right wing. 152 metres, 2 tries, 16 carries. A couple of errors, though. What did you make of Lewis Senior's performance against Wakefield?
Well, I certainly think there's a player there, isn't there? And, you know, we have to remember that he is still a young lad as well. I think it's those couple of errors you've mentioned there, Jono, that makes Willie Peters not pick him on a regular basis. Mm. I think the first bomb that he dropped, Wakefield scored off that, didn't they? And then they scored on that right edge again in the second half. Not saying that Luke Gale's try was particularly Lewis Senior's fault, but it was another try conceded on the right edge. The lad's certainly got pace to bear, hasn't he, as we saw with his interception. I think the Wakefield centre gave up on him by halfway line, didn't he? You know, so the lad's got pace. He can finish a try. He knows where the try line is. I just think that Willie Peters doesn't pick him on a regular basis, because he is liable perhaps for an error or two, which maybe ships us a couple of tries. I don't know what will happen tomorrow night. If Ryan Hall's fit to play, does Yaha go on the right wing? I don't know. I can see that happening, to be honest with you. Mm. I don't think he's going to. We brought Yaha in not to play. You know, so if Ryan Hall's fit and Yaha's fit, I can see them two being the wingers tomorrow night. Whether that's harsh on Lewis Senior, possibly, you know, he scored two tries, as you say, all the meters that he made, you know, 16 carries out of the backfield. And he always seems to get off the advantage line as well, doesn't he? He's a strong lad, isn't he? He's just, I think he's a bit, because of his size and his shape, he seems a bit lumbersome, doesn't he? And I just think that Willie Peters is not particularly a fan of that, I don't think. Or he would have been playing week in, week out. But there's certainly a player there, and as I say, he's still young. And I think he's got a future ahead of him. Whether he becomes a regular right winger at Rovers remains to be seen, of course.
Yeah, and James, I mean, the errors he makes are probably symptomatic of the fact he's not had a real regular run in the team. And it's so hard, isn't it? Because we're seeing with the loan signings of Zenon and it's all about the here and now. And there doesn't seem to be much opportunity to grow yourself into the team. But Senior seems to be a player who needs to grow into the side. And I mean, he's here for this season and beyond. He's not out at the end of the season. And you wonder, is this the time to persevere with him? Is this the time that if we give him the run of games, that this is where he'll actually benefit from it? And this could be the right winger that we need going forward.
Yeah, it's an interesting one because, as you said, he's got pace to bear, and he obviously showed that in the World Cup for Ireland. And you know, obviously, his scoring record at Huddersfield was fantastic as well. But as Scott said, I think those errors that he made, I think for me, I think it's probably been real there as well that they're probably the more abiding memory than his 80-yard try. And his other try, and I just think that considering the opposition who we're playing on tomorrow night, and the halfbacks they've got in Lachlan and Hardik with his pace, he might get exposed. And it feels unfair to say potentially going to get dropped because after scoring two really good tries, etc. But as you said, it's about the here and now. And, if Hall's fit, he goes straight in. But then it becomes Yaha or Senior on the wing. And personally, I'd go with Yaha because you're not going to bring a guy from France with his quality and experience to have him sit out the game or, not play at all. Again, it's frustrating. Actually, if Yaha his loans are not extended, then we're going to have that same situation. We're going to need a right winger. So again, it is on the basis that we'd need somebody long term, or do you say no? We've got to pick somebody who's right for that particular game tomorrow night, and we think Yaha would probably give us more stability and security at the back than senior would. I think it is quite a difficult decision that Peter's going to have to make because there are merits for both ways of it.
Yeah, and well, we'll see tomorrow night what happens. Scott, one player who fronted up certainly stat-wise, Minchella, fared most meters, 100 meters. He made the most carries. He made the second most tackle busts, and he made 45 tackles. Elliot Minchella just seems to be getting better and better week in every single week that he plays.
Yeah, he's a leader, isn't he? Great lad, great player, always turns up, always goes looking for the ball, always looking for a bit of an offload as well too, isn't he? So he's got a lot about his game as Elliot, and he's come on leaps and bounds certainly over the last couple of years, even after that serious injury that he got, that knee injury. Sometimes when you're doing a cruciate and things like that, there's maybe an element of doubt of, how fit am I and things like that. But he's come back and he's a real leader, isn't he? And I think he's one of the first names in the starting 13 every week, isn't he? It's interesting that I was reading in the paper the other day that Willie Peters is talking about managing players and making sure they don't burn out. And, because he's doing long minutes as well, is Mini, isn't he? I think he's probably doing 60 minutes a game as well, maybe 65. And it's a big ask for a forward, even at loose forward, 45 tackles in a game, taking the ball in, 65 minutes a game is a long time, So whether he does need to be spelled or whether he needs, I don't know, does he? I'm sure Mini would never want resting for a week or anything like that. That's probably not in his forte. But maybe we have to look after players like him, you know, certainly to the fresh towards the back end of the season as well. But as James said, and you said, it's the here and now as well, isn't it? And we haven't got the squad at the moment to go and rest a load of players and put other players in. We just haven't. So, and you would always have Mini in your team starting 13 every single game, wouldn't you? It's your number 13 at the start every game, isn't he? And he leads by example, and I think the other players follow him as well. You know, when Mini turns up, other players turn up as well, don't they? You know, and he's an 8 out of 10, 9 out of 10 every single week. You never really see him have a bad game, really, do you? You know, he's always consistent and top player, I think. Top player for us.
What do you reckon, James? Is he your captain for next season?
100%, yeah. I think, you know, he's got the capability, he's got the skills. I think he's got, you know, clearly got the respect of his teammates, and they say he is that leader. He leads from the front. He's always going to be in the middle of the park in the action. And for me, it's going to be Minchella who's going to be the captain next year.
Yeah, Scott. Big question for you: is the game going soft for Yaya? The yellow card that he received, I mean, on the face of it, it looked like a perfect tackle. I remember a good few years ago when Eddie Gardner on loan from St. Helens did a very similar tackle, and he was absolutely lauded for what he did. It seemed very similar. Fodia seemed to be treated very harshly with that yellow card.
I've watched it back what must be a million times now, and I still cannot see anything wrong with that tackle. It was perfectly timed. He wrapped his arms. He just won the contest and put Joe on his backside. That's all it was. You know, one man being stronger than the other. So for them to be sent off and given 10 minutes just because a player is allegedly, and I'm not saying Jarrett wasn't injured, by the way, he may well have been, but just because a player stays down, that warrants a yellow card. And then he goes to the judiciary and he gets a £250 fine. Yeah. For what? For what? What's he been fined for? What's he been sent off for tackling a player fairly? The game's gone mad. I don't know where the game's going in regards, you know, the tackling side of things. You know, we see in the academy at the moment tackling below shoulder level. There was that game with 52 penalties or something the other week. I stayed behind and watched a bit of Rovers Academy against Wigan Academy after the Salford Cup tie. And it was just a penalty fest because that was played under the same rules. You know, players were just tackling up and around, you know, the breastbone area, and they were getting penalised. And you could see the play, they were like, what for? What am I being penalised for? You know, everything was like below shoulder height. And where does it go from there, though? Is it going to be below waist height then? You can only tackle around the legs. You know, where does it go? You know, I don't know where it ends this, but we can't take out the contact of rugby league, especially fair contact as well. If we're going to start penalising fair tackles and fair contact, where does the game go from there? I have no idea. I don't know what the answer is, but Yaha was extremely hard done by. And then to be fined £250 for a legal tackle, I just can't get my head around that at all. I really can't.
I wonder if he has to pay it in pounds or euros.
What's the exchange rate at the moment?
Yeah, it won't make much difference.
No, exactly. Whatever the exchange rate is, go the cheaper option.
Yeah. I'll tell you what, James, referees seem to be adjudicating on things based on the how players react to the tackle and stuff. That don't seem fair, does it?
No, I don't, because I think, you know, you look at the incidents on with Yaha, you know, there was no wait for your players kicked off, running into the referee. Kendall was just going to carry on with the ball. And he, you know, after he spoke to the touch judge, that he decided he was going to give him a yellow card. But for me, it was just a perfectly fair tackle. It's just a really good hit that, you know, we should be seeing more of. Unfortunately, there's a clash of heads. I think, you know, people like Richard Silverwood and Ian Smith, you know, former, you know, top-level referees, you know, they were perplexed about it, why it was given, and saying, you know, it's just a perfectly fair tackle. I think if it had been a dangerous tackle and, you know, contact with a head, then Jarrett wouldn't have, the force that Yaha hit him, he would not have passed that HIA. But he's back on the field within, you know, 10, 15 minutes. So, yeah, it was just absolutely bonkers. And I think it just, I think put it down to the RFL missing Jesse Sue's regular 250 quid. So they needed to get some more money out of Rovers.
Well, Scott, they don't. What I'd say is at the moment, there don't seem to be much benefit of the doubt given to the players who are making the tackles. The referees, match officials, even the match review panel seem to be coming very hard on the players who make the tackle, even if it's accidental collision, whether it's, like you said, someone making a tackle, but when the collide heads up, there don't seem to be very forgiving to the person making the tackle, which some people will say, though, that's how it should be. If we want to protect players, then you've got to be harsh on players who are making these tackles. But in a game like the one against Wakefield, where there's no TV cameras, there's no replays, referees, touch judges are making snap decisions, and it seems to be that the benefit of the doubt always goes to the player who's on the receiving end of the tackle rather than the person who's making the tackle.
I think the thing is as well, you know, again, I'm not criticising Jowett in any way, shape or form, but it seems to be that if a player stays down and they're injured, then the penalty comes and then a 10 minutes comes as well. It's as though, you know, you can't hit a player hard legally and a player can't be hurt. It's a contact sport, you know. These blokes are smashing into each other like mini car crashes. I'm surprised more players don't stay down through legal tackles, and I totally get that. We've got to look after the players and the welfare and things like that. And there's no place in the sport for head-eye tackles. And, you know, and the HIA system, it's working clearly. And we're making sure that players are safe on and off the field. But we can't be penalising good tackles, can we? We just can't be. Because where does it go from there? And it's always the defender that gets penalised, as you say. You know, always coming off. They always come off second best, even if it's a good tackle. And as I say, I think the players staying down is part of the problem with that. And I'm not saying that players shouldn't be staying down. If they're legitimately injured, they're injured, aren't they? You know, if there has been an accidental head clash and they need a HIA, then so be it. You know, but I think, as you say, without the TV cameras there, referees, and perhaps more specifically the linesmen, they're giving what they see. And I don't know what they've seen at the time. Because Kendall wasn't going to give any penalty whatsoever against Yaha, it seemed. And it was only when I think the referees, the linesman seemed to get involved and had a word in his ear that a penalty came and 10 minutes in the bin came. But I don't know where that decision came from. Is it just because Jowett stayed down? But if that's the case and a player stays down every time, well, it's going to be a lot of sin bins, isn't there? And a lot of 250 quids. You know, I can't get my head around it, really. I really can't.
I think you're right, Scott, about the, you know, if a player stays down, he gets that probably increased in the perception of the severity of it. And I just go back to the incident with O'Donnell at York and get for Lee in the cup, you know, when he basically dumped the York player on his neck. Get six games, but apparently the York player just got straight up. Now, if the York player had stayed down, O'Donnell probably would have got a lot longer. When you look at that tackle in isolation, That was a neck breaker, literally. And you got six games for it. So I think you're right that if a player does stay down, then a penalty comes into it. And I think we had the same at Castleford where Lynette got sin binned after incident with I can't remember this year or last year with Westerman. Westerman, you know, it's a pretty fair tackle. Westerman stayed down. Lynette got sin binned when the judiciary looked at it. That was because Andy Lass had kicked off about the first game, didn't he? And there was no case to answer. So I think people, if players still stay down, then it's almost trying to get the opposition player sent off or the sanction worse, which is what the green card was brought in for. So, you know, how many green cards have we seen this season?
Well, Will Dagger, I can think of. It's interesting with the green card because we saw at the start of the season they're using them, and frankly, over the last six rounds, they seem to have died of death. I ain't seen a green card for anything.
I heard of one. No. So I think I've seen was Will Dagger.
Yeah, Dagger got one, didn't he? Yeah.
But he was actually clattered. He got up and sort of the referee said, "Oh, you're faking it," and off you go.
Yeah. A great point, James. Scott. what a welcome addition and what a welcome return it is to see Ryan Milnes back in the side. He just seems to add some balance to the side. Jez Litton can go back into his preferred position. Matty Parcell and Jez can then do their little interchanges. And Ryan Milnes, yes, Jordan Abdul gets applauded quite rightly when he's on the pitch. For me, we don't see him out on the pitch enough. But Ryan Milnes just seems to add a lot of calmness to the side, a lot of control. And he allows Mikey Lewis to go play his game. And for me, that's been the big difference over the last two games.
And I think it's continuity as well, isn't it? Getting a run of games as well, as we've said, you know, about other players. If you get a run of games, you learn the systems. I'm sure they'll learn the systems in training anyway, whether they're playing or not. But it's not like you've been in a game day situation, is it? And he certainly took the bull by the horns, hasn't he, as Rowan? You know, these last few games, I think he's been superb. His short kicking game is absolutely outstanding. You know, the amount of tries we've scored off those short kicks, there was a couple last week against Wakefield, I think, wasn't there? A couple against Salford as well, I think. You know, so his short kicking game is very good. He manages the game well, you know, when we need the clock to tick down, he gets that ball landing in the field of play and over the whitewash, doesn't he? You know, I think, I remember speaking to a couple of people at the club a few years back, and they believed that Rowan Milnes was probably the best halfback at the club then. Mm-hmm. He had a lot of development to do, but they believed that he was the player that would probably become something, travel the fairness and make a good career out of being a halfback, which speaks volumes, I think. And, you know, we've probably seen that. I think he's a tall lad, isn't he? He's a big lad for a halfback, isn't he? You know, I think is he 6'4" or 6'1" or something for a halfback? He's quite a tall lad, isn't he? And I think if he just had another perhaps yard of pace, and maybe if he took the line on, you know, maybe once or twice, but maybe that might come in the future with his game, you know. But certainly controlling the game and knowing when to speed it up and when to slow it down, I think he's been superb these last few weeks. I really do. And yes, we're missing Jordan, and certainly Jordan's high kicking game and things like that, but I think Rowan's overall management of games, I think it's been great. I think it's been superb. Long may it continue. I think it's fab. Yeah.
Yeah. And James, I wonder if the challenge that's been laid down to Rowan is you, by Willie Peters, is you show me during this run of games why you should be starting half back and not Jordan Abdul. And he's got the opportunity. You saw how frustrated he was after he suffered that wrist injury, what kept him out. Obviously, Jordan Abdul came back. He then got injured against Catalan. Now, Roy Milnes has got the chance once again to establish himself in that position. And it's a fantastic challenge for Rowan, because I genuinely think he's got an opportunity now to set the claim for that starting spot and being the first choice halfback with Mikey Lewis.
He has, yeah. I think, you know, I just think he's very underrated. I think, you know, by a lot of supporters, you know, we feel as though, I think there's a feeling that if he's playing instead of Abdul, that, you know, it's a downgrade. But as you said, I think the last few games, he's just shown his class. And it's just that, I think what it is that calmness, as Scott, you know, Scott alluded to, that when we need to sort of, you know, game management, getting the ball into touch to take some time out the game, you know, he does it, you know, and he's got a good, you know, he's got a great kicking game, and it's just that calmness, and it's a great foil to Mikey Lewis. You know, Mikey's got that unpredictability, you know, we can go and, you know, with his burst of speed and just, you know, sort of create that opening from nothing. Whereas, you know, Rowan's a bit, you know, I think he's a bit more measured, you know, sort of, he's a bit more controlling and just sort of more, it just seems to be playing. He probably seems to play, you know, in the old analogy, playing dinner suit most games. You know, he just doesn't seem to be very unhurried, just in calm control of what he's doing and control of the situation. And I think, yeah, he's got a great opportunity to really establish himself. And I think, you know, if we get to a situation where we've got, you know, a fully fit Abdul one day, we've got Mikey Lewis, we've got Rowan Milnes in the squad, you know, we'll have probably the best, you know, halfbacks in the game. You know, and it's a big claim, but people laud, you know, rightly Lewis and Abdul as being this sort of top quality halfbacks in Super League. You know, you've got to add potentially Bird Mills into that equation now as well.
Yeah. And Scott, I mean, Lachlan Coote, I mean, it's crazy to think. I think he's played, 27 games for Hull Kingston Rovers. Despite that, he got a fantastic ovation at the end of the game. Lots and lots of Rovers supporters staying behind to pay tribute to him and the words he spoke so eloquently. Passionately about his time at the Robins. Always sad to see a player having to retire through injury and not through their own choice necessarily, because they want to do it at that time, more so because they've had to do it through injury. But Lachlan Coote, fantastic tribute, and to see the guard of honour that both sides gave him, it just shows what a standing in the game that Lachlan Coote does have.
Yeah, absolutely, without a doubt, that isn't it. We're not just talking about the 20 odd games he's played for Rovers as well. We look at his career at Saints, and then with the NRL teams he's played for. He's an NRL Grand Final winner, Super League Grand Final winner, Challenge Cup winner. We were lucky to have him for the time we did, and perhaps he wasn't on the pitch, long enough. And probably Lachlan would be the first to admit that, through his HIAs and his head injuries and things like that. But we were celebrating a player there, I think, at the end of the game last week, who's had a fantastic career. He's won a lot of trophies. He's played a lot of games of rugby league. He's represented his country, Scotland, at World Cups and things like that. So I think it was lovely to see Rovers and the Wakefield players give him that line of honour as well. That just shows the esteem that he's held in. It's such a shame that he can't go out on his terms. I think that's the same for every player who has to retire when it's not their decision. But he has to think about himself, doesn't he? He has to think about his young family and his wife and the future. But I think in the games that we got to see him play in, we could see what a real quality rugby league player he was, wasn't he? Such a fantastic fullback, always joining the line. You're always linking round the back, to get the centre of the winger in for tries. A decent goal kicker, maybe. Some might argue he never seemed to miss at St. Helens, but maybe missed a few for us. But a great, great player, and a nice guy as well. I've had the privilege of speaking to him a couple of times, and he's just one of the most loveliest fellas, you could ever wish to meet. A true family man, great rugby player, and I just wish him all the very, very best, whatever the future holds. I'm sure we all do. When he gets back to Australia, whether he can get back in some sort of coaching capacity or what, I don't know, but I'm sure there's certainly some teams that can, learn off his experience and the things that he's won and the things that he's achieved in the game. Of that, I am sure.
Yeah, and Willie Peters has already said that he's going to be sticking around. He's going to be in and around the boys for the rest of the season at least. So, be interesting to see what influence he has. James, I suppose, Lachlan Coote, if you're a bit harsh, he'll go into that bracket of what if, in 5 years, 10 years time, it'll be, you look back and you go, oh, what if he just stayed fit? What if he hadn't had them HIAs? What if he'd have made that kick? What if? Yeah, I think that's where he'll be placed for us. And it's such a shame because, like Scott said so well, throughout his career, what a fantastic player he has been. And it's just unfortunate that the end of his career was at Rovers when there was just, we just wanted that little bit more, didn't we? We just wanted to, because we saw the glimpses of what he could do.
Yeah, we did. The guys are saying about his career, phenomenal career, success on both sides of the world. We will look back and say, what if? Possibly. But then also, by the same token, and also say, actually, the fact that we were able to attract a player of Coote's quality to the club just shows the trajectory that the club is going on. Mm. And that, is still was able to play for us for two years. And unfortunately, it's the head injuries that really did it for him, and the way the game is going now, and look after himself, his family. So it's the right thing for him to do. But I just look back and thinking, if you'd have said to me 2 or 3 years ago that we'd be signing somebody like Lachlan Coote, sort of a grand final winner in the NRL, triple Super League winner, grand final winner in the UK, and be coming to Hull KR, I'd think, I love some of what you're having. But he has, we signed him, shows where the club's going. And when he did play, when he's able to play, he just showed what a top quality player he was. And, I think he's probably talked to a lot of the players in the club, about the skills and the just being around the club, you know, what he brought to the whole environment around the club, you know, just making that, taking the professionalism of the club to a different level, to be from, you know, probably some of the periods we've seen before. You know, the guy was a winner, and that's what we need. We need winners at the club, and we're getting them now.
Yeah, and talking about the fullback role, Scott, Rovers announced that Tanguy Zenon's deal had been extended for a further 2 weeks, with Catalan having a 24 recall on him. Was you pleased to see that deal extended? Because he's a player who don't seem to have let us down in the two games he's played so far.
I think so, yeah. I think it's a no-brainer, isn't it? I think it's, you know, if you can get another 2 weeks, I think is it 4 week maximum due to visa issues? I think it can only stay for 4 weeks anyway, can't it? But I think it's great to have him for the next 2 weeks. I think he's a natural choice. Although Jack Walker's been named in the squad tomorrow night, I think it'll be Zenon that plays. Again, if you, as James said, if you're bringing players in from France, you're going to play them, aren't you? You know, what I like about him is that he doesn't seem to get flustered, does he? You know, he's safe under the high ball. There was a few times Salford and Wakefield broke our defensive line, and he was the last line of defence. He never missed a tackle. He took the man down every time. You know, it just seems a cool head for a young lad. I enjoy watching him, and I think he's just fitted into the team like a water off a duck's back, hasn't he? You know, he looks cool. He looks competent. As I say, safe under the high ball. The try he scored, you know, against Salford in the cup, he started the move and finished it. This is from a young lad who came in just 2 or 3 days prior to playing, you know. So the lad's got a lot about him, and I can see why he's thought the high of over in Perpignan as well. I mean, whether he's got a future there, I don't know. I don't see why he wouldn't, but I'm guessing if there was absolutely any opportunity of signing somebody like him on a permanent basis, I'm sure Rovers would be in there. I'm certainly sure it's something we'd look at, because he's not looked out of place, has he? And he ain't let us down at all in the last couple of games. And hopefully, if he plays the next two games against Lee, and then he plays in the derby as well, well, hopefully, you know, he sees us to another couple of victories just by his calmness and competence at fullback. And yeah, I like the lad. I think he's good player.
Yeah, and James, another player who's played fullback, but not featured there for a long time now. He's PLT, of course, going back to Keighley on loan. Now he's going on a 2 week loan deal, but it's supposed to be a rolling one, so he could be there for the rest of the season. Some supporters have questioned why he's not been given the opportunity to play at full back. For me, James, it looks like Willie Peters favours him in the half back role. He's played there in the reserves. Obviously the size of him, you know, he looks more of a halfback than a fullback, and I think Zenon, I think he's only a year older or 2 years, but the size of him is incomparable, isn't it, really, to him. Suppose it's a good deal for Phoenix, isn't it, to go out on loan, get some game time in professional rugby league, and because the reserve grade system just isn't working out for a number of reasons. And a player like Phoenix does need to be playing.
It does, and I think, you know, totally, just going back onto Zenon and echo what Scott said, it just like seems to have so calm and collected, etc. But, you know, and back to PLT, I think, you know, you're right, it is that game time. And I think it does seem as though Peters does see him more as a half-back. You know, he had a spell in a few weeks ago at Keighley when he sort of played against his dad. So it's gonna be good. You know, we've also got to bear in mind that he's with us for the long term. You know, so there's no point in rushing him and putting exposing him in a level that, you know, clearly Peters doesn't feel as though he's reached. Just go patient and just take a long-term view on it.
Yeah, Scott, huge game tomorrow night. I mean, the Lee Leopards, what a surprise package they've been. I doubt anybody other than Derek Beaumont had predicted that would be where they are at this stage of the season. Fourth in the table on 20 points. Rovers seventh in the table on 7. If we beat them, we'll go level on points. Squad news, great to see Ryan Hall coming back to stop, fresh from his surgery, his planned surgery. It's going to be a really tough encounter in Lyon tomorrow night, Scott.
They're a good side, aren't they? They're a very good side. They recruited well last year. We knew that. They took a gamble. They recruited well in the hope that they were going to get promoted, which they did easily. But they've not just recruited well, they've got seasoned pros as well, haven't they? You know, players that have been there, seen it, done it. You know, if you look at, just look at the wings, for example, you know, Josh Charnley and Tom Briscoe, and as James mentioned, Zach Hardacre as well. You know, they've got players who are highly experienced, but still very, very good rugby league footballers, and still with pace to burn as well. We know Charnley, you know, I mean, when you've got Lachlan in the halves as well with Mella, and they move that ball wide, as we saw at Craven Park on the beach with that last minute try, you know, they move the ball, to the edges, they get it out there quick, they know they've got pace out wide. It's going to be a tough game. I think we've got a chance. Don't get me wrong. I'm not writing us off. I think we could win the game. I really do. But I think we have to play them at our game. If we allow them to move, and it's easier said than done, but if we allow them to move the ball wide, I think our problem at the moment is that we've got a squad of players that are perhaps not particularly the fastest. We don't have, we mentioned Lewis Senior, who's got a better pace, of course, but I don't think we actually have any out and out wingers that can fly. I know Ryan Hall's still got a bit of movement in him, but you know, at the age he's at, he's probably lost a yard of pace. If the turn is round and Charnley gets in behind us or Briscoe gets in behind us, just like Liam Marshall did for Wigan, you know, with them little dinks over the top. I think we struggle in those situations. If a team can turn us round with little chips over the top, we struggle. So I think we need to play them at our game. I think we can beat them down the middle. I really do. Even, you know, without Jesse and, you know, certain other players, I think we can take them down the middle. Somehow we've got to stop the ball. We've got to stop them moving the ball. How we do it, I don't know, because, you know, Lachlan Lamb certainly pulls the strings for them, doesn't he? You know, he's a fantastic player. They've got strong Ipape, you know, at hooker. They've got some fantastic players right across the pitch. Can we beat them? Yes, of course we can. If we get our game right, we can beat them. And maybe we shouldn't worry as much about them and perhaps worry about our own game, but we have to accept that they have got very good players right across the park. There's a reason that they're fourth, and there's a reason that they're in the Challenge Cup semi-final. It's because they're a good team, and we have to accept that, you know. So let's go there and see if we can do a job on them. But it'll be tough. You're right, it'll be tough.
Yeah, James, Frankie Holton, he won't be featuring tomorrow night. He's still injured. They are welcoming back, though, Jack Hughes, Zach Hardacre, and Ben Nakabuahi. And, like Scott's already said, Lachlan Lamb, John Asiata, Edwin Pape. I mean, they've got some really good players. I think one of the features of Lee this season, though, James, and it's not something that Rovers have been able to enjoy, is that they've been able to have their best players out for a long time this season. And they're bearing the fruits of that consistency now. We saw they've had a bit of adversity with suspensions and injuries. And as good as this Lee side is, when I see that Ryan Hall's returning, and I see that potentially we could be having Ryan Hall, Sean Kenny-Dowell, Tom Opacek and Uyid Yaha, as well as Zenon at fullback. I mean, that is one of the strongest, you know, when you look at them centres, wingers, fullback, that is a very, very strong lineup. And that gives me enough confidence to suggest that we could go to Lee and get the victory. We shouldn't be fearful. Of course, we shouldn't be fearful. Willis Peters' mantra is, don't worry about the opposition. If we lose, because we haven't followed our game plan. But when you see players like that lining up for the Robins, you know, you do think, hang on, we shouldn't be fearful. Almost, we should be not expecting a victory, but expecting to come out at least very, very, very close.
Yeah, totally agree. I think, you know, that we've got nothing to fear. You know, it was earlier when we were talking about the Challenge Cup. You know, we've nothing to fear against playing with Lee. You know, they are a very good team, as we've seen. You know, they're not fourth by accident. But I think, as you sort of highlighted, they haven't really had that sort of a dip that everybody else seems, you know, all clubs seem to go through at one stage in the season. It really brought to home to me when I was watching them at Magic Weekend. I think Bill Arthur was saying that they had something like, you know, got 10 ever present. At the time, Rovers had two. You know, I think that just shows the consistency they've had and the stability they've had in the team, which does really help. So, you know, I think they are due to have a dip. Hopefully, it'll start tomorrow. But say we've got nothing to fear. Let them worry about Rovers. That back line is top notch. You put that back line up against probably any team in Super League and expect them to do, you know, perform and put the frighteners up the opposition, and, you know, sort of, yeah, you know, might be looking at the Rovers squad and thinking, you know what, they've got a good back line, they've got some really good solid forwards, you know, we're gonna have to run our top performance again to where to come away with a victory and maintain our position. But it's probably a bit too early to start saying it's perhaps a pivotal game in our season. When you think about, tomorrow we've got the derby the week after, and Leeds, who seem to be, you know, sort of a archetypal Jekyll and Hyde in the week after. I think the next three games, and I'm not, you know, in the league game, they're obviously semi-finals, a different kettle of fish. I think, you know, are probably going to be key for us for the rest of the season. You know, if we don't come away with victories in those games, potentially we're not going to be in the playoffs. And I think tomorrow is a night where we've got to really sort that marker in the ground and say, you know, we are serious about getting to the playoffs. And, you know, no better way than to go and beat one of your closest rivals for a playoff spot.
Yeah, and I suppose, I mean, you know, we didn't expect Lee to be in the playoffs, Scott. We didn't expect them to be a rival in the playoffs. But it does feel like James just said, that if we can get a victory tomorrow night, it feels like a statement victory on the back of our adversity in terms of injuries, players missing, and if we can get three on the trot, go into the derby full of confidence, who knows what happens in that game. We've got, you know, Leeds up next. You know, it just feels like if we can get that momentum behind us by getting a victory tomorrow night, so crucial, not least the fact that the league table is so tight. I mean, Catalan on 24 points, Warrington on 22, and then you've got Wigan in third on 20, Lee in fourth on 20, Salford in fifth on 20, and then you've got Saints and Rovers both on 18. I mean, points are so important now, aren't they? Because it makes such a difference. And I don't think it's the season where you can, with five or six games to go, be going, oh, we'll win the next five games. It feels like you've got to get the points on the board now, because there won't be a second chance at the back end of the season.
The next game's the most important, isn't it? I know it's the old cliche, but, you know, if you go to Leeds tomorrow night and lose, the pressure's on us, isn't it? The pressure's on us then to go and beat Hull in the derby. You know, Leeds is the week before the semi-final, so it all depends what Willie does in regards picking a squad for that game. You know, I mean, semi-final last year, we lost players, didn't we, against Leeds, and we went and got beat at Leeds and went into the semi-final against Huddersfield, and we lost players. So whether we'd look at, I don't know whether we beat Lee, whether he's looking to beat Lee and Hull, and then maybe arrest players for the Leeds game right to the semi-final. I don't know. But I think for me, you've got to go and name your best team every single game that you play, and you go out and win every game. You're right. Well, I think tomorrow night, Scott, is...
We saw, didn't we, last season when we went to Leeds, and I think SKD got rested, and Tony Smith tried to be a bit smart, and it bit us on the arse. And we never recovered.
Yeah,
we never recovered from that. So I
kickstarted their season. It kickstarted their season, didn't it? You know, they were absolutely hopeless up until then, and then they ended up playing the final. Kickstarted their season.
On the flip side, though, we picked Lachlan Coote, and then he missed the semi-final, didn't he? You know, because he went up for the... I think he had an HIA then, that game, yeah, didn't he? And he missed the semi-final.
Yeah, well, we rated him as well for a sin bin.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. You know, so it's catch 22, isn't it? What do you do? I'm sure Willie will come up with the answers. But for me, you always play your strongest team, don't you? For me, you always play your strongest team. You go out to win every game, I think. You know, yeah. So big game though tomorrow night, I think. I think it's big. If we could win two of the next three, it'd be brilliant. I'll take whichever two. I'd like one of them to be them, you know, of course, as we all would. But if we lost tomorrow night and we beat Hull and Leeds, I think we'd take that. You know, if we win tomorrow night and beat all but lost at Leeds, if we could win all three, wow, fantastic. But I think if we'd win two of the next three, I think we'd take that, wouldn't we? I don't know. I would, I think.
Yeah. I tell you what, I'll take tomorrow. I'll take a 50-0 victory, no injuries. I'm going to the derby confident as anything. That's what I'll take tomorrow. Well, I tell you what, side note, I don't know if you listen to it, the James Graham, the Buy Around podcast with Tim Sheens released earlier this week. Tim Sheens mentioning that there was a very real possibility that Hull Kingston Rovers and Salford were going to merge. Marwan Kilcash was wanting to take Salford down and merging with the Robins. And it just seems all kinds of craziness. And, I mean, Tim Sheens, he's been around. He's a knowledgeable bloke. So you suggest that if he says it, there's some element of truth in what might have happened. But Scott, when you hear things like that, you just think, God, what a crazy time it was. You know, what were we 5 years ago and the £1 million?
Yeah.
Everything was on there. Just the Jamie Peacock experiment that never really worked. It just seems a bit of a crazy time back then.
I'm just wondering if, I mean, I don't want to quote Tim Sheens per se, but I'm just wondering when he talks about the merger and the teams coming together, is he more talking from the perspective that if Salford had gone down, a lot of their players might have joined us rather than it being a merger of two clubs? I think it's perhaps we might have taken a handful of Salford's better players, maybe, and he's thinking that's a merger. I don't know. I just don't see how Hulky are and Salford Red Devils could merge. Mm. It just doesn't make any sense whatsoever, does it? If that's what he's quoting. Yeah. But Rovers are a completely different kettle of fish now, aren't we, from what we were 5 years ago? You know, we're a different club, both on and off the field. And there's going to be a few downs and there's going to be a few dips to come. But there's also a lot more highs than we ever had, you know, 5 years ago. And we're a club on the up. And, you know, I speak with a few of my friends. And at the time when we lost that £1 million game and we were relegated, it was heartbreaking, wasn't it? And we were thinking, are we ever going to come back? And what, you know, what is the club going to die? And is it going to fall? But in hindsight, it was probably the best thing that probably could have happened to us, if we're being honest, because it gave us the opportunity to be where we are now. It gave us the opportunity to rebuild. It gave us the opportunity to start again, ultimately, didn't it? If Salford had gone down, would their fan base, would they come back? Perhaps I don't think they would have done. Maybe there wouldn't be a Salford now. Maybe, or if there was, then maybe there might be like a witness and to be just lingering in the first division or the championship or wherever there might be. I think that our loyal fan base, and I think Neil Woodgill has said this on many occasions, the fact that we all stuck by the club and we all bought our passes and our memberships helped the club get promoted again, and we all stuck by us. We stuck by the club stuck by us, and we're in a different place now, aren't we, Hull Kingston Rovers, than we were 5 years ago, that is for certain.
Yeah, 100%. And James, next week we've got Rod Stewart, we've got The Who, and Rovers announcing that on Derby Day, the Pigeon Detectives are going to be playing the boys out as they run out of the tunnel ahead of kickoff on Sunday. Are you looking forward to seeing the Pigeons?
I'll have to admit, Sherman AGA, Chris, I knew out of two of the three, and the Pigeons weren't one of them.
No, but it just shows, doesn't it?
I'll go what the young ones say. If the young ones are sort of getting excited about it, then they must be pretty good. So yeah, I'm sure it'll be a good show.
Yeah, it's going to be another exciting spectacle. And I think we'll finish on, I mean, it was crazy, and we'll speak very briefly about it. During the week, it was 4 years to the day that Matty Parcell signed for the Robins. I feel a bit guilty, to be honest, guys. When we talk about the great signing of Matty Parcell and how well he's done and what a great deal we got in terms of swapping him for Sean Lunt, you almost forget the impact Sean Lunt had on the side. And he should go down in folklore for what he did for the club. That we've already talked about, Challenge Cup semi-final, what he did when he played. He was an incredible talent for the Robins. And yes, the deal at the time was the best we've probably got, because no doubt Sean Lunt will admit that he was coming to the end of his time with the Robins. He'd had a serious illness and it just wasn't working for him, and to then get Matty Parcell on the back of it. But it was a fantastic piece of business at the time, and I suppose, Scott, we're now reaping the benefits of having Matty Parcell at the Robins, and he looks every inch the best, if not the best hooker in Super League.
Yeah, I totally agree with that. He's certainly in the top three, isn't he? And even if he's not, you know, there's some. To be fair, there are some good hookers in Super League, but I would put Matty in the top three without a doubt. You know, the fact that we can spell him now with Jez, I think is great. You know, because he's got a good foil in Jez there when Jez comes on and he does his stint, and then we can bring, you know, Matty on. You know, even in the second half, I think they didn't get into the field till the second half last week. You know, he came on and did maybe 30 minutes straight, but he's a top, top hooker, a top, top player. But I just want to reiterate what you said about Lunty as well. You know, when we got relegated, he was the first one to put his hand up and said, you know what, I'll hang around, I'll do another year, and I'll be part of this team that gets us back into Super League. And Lunty was a top, top player, a very good player, and he was very loyal to all Kingston Rovers. But I think the deal that we got when Sean went to Leeds and we took Matt Parcell is probably one of the best bits of business we've done in years. The fact that we've had the last four, you know, hopefully next season, 5 years out of Matt Parcell, probably at the prime, in his prime as well, at the top of his game, is absolutely outstanding for all Kingston Rovers. It really is. I just hope that, again, Matty, I know every now and then, I guess he's prone to an odd injury now and then, isn't he? You know, he's probably not the biggest kid. He gets knocked about a bit, but he's a top, top player. And his runs from dummy half and the way, you know, that he's weaving around the pitch and trying to find them little holes and them little gaps to put people through. Top, top player. And it was probably one of the best bits of business Rovers have done in a long time. But hats off to Sean Lunt as well, because he was a top player for us.
Yeah, fantastic. And that brings us to the end of another jam-packed episode of the Red Robin Podcast Weekly. And it's great to see so many people tuning in on YouTube and commenting. And Matty Lane, he was the last comment. He says, any ideas who Rovers are linked with? I'll give you a clue. His first name rhymes with Bison, and his second name rhymes with Tizzle. And I've sent a text to someone who works at the Newcastle Herald to see if there's any truth in it. So if there is any truth in that rumour, it'll be confirmed very soon. But if it's a player, if it is that player, it's going to be very exciting, because he's an absolutely fantastic player, and he's still got a lot of legs in him. So we will see what happens. This has been the Red Robin Podcast Weekly, which is powered by 360 Chartered Accountants and Budget Ties Auto Centre. The Robins have got a huge game tomorrow against the Lee Leopards. I nearly said Centurions. It just rolls off the tongue, doesn't it? Even now, after half of the season, it still nearly rolls off the tongue. But for now, please remember, just live, love, laugh and be happy.